place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur in real time.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another week here at FBC Radio Live. I'm your host, Ian Glennon, joined, as always, by my Italian friend up in the Northeast, Mr. John Sapicetti. John, I know you saw the clip. You know, there was a anniversary, a Goodfellas anniversary, recently, and it was the most upsetting mention of a shine box ever. And if I know you know what I'm talking about, because of course that was June 11th, 52 years ago, according to the movie. But I saw that pop on my timeline the other day, and of course I thought of you. I thought of my friend Mike DeBater, all my paisans, or honorary paisans, because of course I am not Italian. It's one of the few things that I am not, let's put it that way. But yeah, it's just another reminder of how great that movie was.
Oh, incredible. And again, we talked about it, 3 weeks ago after Ray Liotta passed away, and it's just timeless, right? I probably think of, if I knew 75 people, you know, like guys our ages, you know, well, I know we're spread apart in age, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
Like half of them would say that Goodfellas is their absolute favorite film. It's one of mine. It's not quite, you know, The Godfather or Raging Bull or whatever. It's sensational because there's so many memorable scenes in it. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, yeah, remember that scene in that movie? And remember that scene? And, oh, my God, how great was that? So, yeah, it was kind of cool. I mean, that's an iconic scene, you know, where, you know, Billy Bats is out of jail. He's buying drinks, and the drinks are on the house. You know, it's just a sensational scene. I mean, Joe Pesci won the Oscar for that, and I'm still upset that Goodfellas didn't win Best Picture that year. Dances with Wolves won, which is more of an Academy Award-type film than Goodfellas. But nonetheless, that film is still timeless.
In my mind, it did win. Okay, that's how I view it. Okay,
okay.
I'm right there with you. I love the movie. Certainly not my, you know, favorite movie of all time. I think I've been very clear on what, if I had to pick one, what my favorite movie of all time would be. But that's certainly up there, and you're not gonna get too far down my list of personal favorites before you get to that. So. So anytime something like that happens to pop up, I like to enjoy that. You know, another little tidbit, E.T., 40 years ago.
Mm.
How about that? I mean, that's older than I am. I mean, I'm only 35. So, that obviously came out, actually, as I learned, it came out 2 days after my mom graduated high school. So, that's how long ago it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I was already out of high school. That's how old I am.
Yeah.
There
you go.
I graduated high school in 1981. Yeah. So. 1982, E.T. Again, we talk about Scorsese with Goodfellas. Well, there's Steven Spielberg with E.T., who, you know, I can make the case that Steven Spielberg directed more near great or great films than any other director. I mean, Scorsese and Stanley Kubrick are my all-time favorite directors, but Spielberg is right there, right behind them. I just go right through the whole list from Jaws to Raiders to E.T. to, well, Schindler's List is his crowning achievement, Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's just endless. You know, Munich is a great film. It's one after another, Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
He won the Oscar for that, for best director. I mean, he's probably directed more, like, you know,
memorable
near great or great films. Right. And Lincoln with Daniel Day-Lewis, who's the only actor that's won an Oscar in a Steven Spielberg movie, because Spielberg's more of a storyteller than, say, Scorsese, who is an artist and gets the best performances out of actors. I mean, Scorsese directed a slew of actors to the Oscars.
Think about Saving Private Ryan, though. That was almost an example of just too many good actors in one movie.
Exactly.
And it's like, who are you gonna give it to, you know?
Right, exactly, yeah. And same thing with Jaws. Like, I mean, you know, Richard Dreyfuss, Robert Shaw, you know, just was sensational. Both of those guys are, and they're buddies too, which is kind of cool. You know, like, in fact, it was interesting when Schindler's List was going to be made, Spielberg was going to produce it. He wanted Scorsese to direct it. And Scorsese said, no, you have to direct this movie. This is your movie. This is, you know, about your people. You know, I wouldn't expect Spielberg to make Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Or Raging Bull. I mean, it's, you know, sometimes it's in your soul to make that film. And, yeah, they're two of the all-time greats.
No, hey, you're not going to get any complaints from me. There's plenty of plenty of movies of theirs that I will watch endlessly. We have, obviously, Game 5 of the, I almost said Stanley Cup Final. We're going to get to that in a second. We have Game 5 of the NBA Final today and tonight. And, you know, I know, obviously, it feels like, especially in the moment, if you're a Celtics fan, especially, you feel like they lost an opportunity. And the reason you feel that is because you felt like that multiple times throughout this postseason run. And I say that to kind of, you know, put a little positive spin on it all for any Celtics fan out there that is still a little uneasy. You know, I said it, last week at some point. You know, this team, this entire postseason run, this entire playoff run has not made it easy for themselves. So why are they going to start now, John? Why are they going to start now? Like, why would, you know, and I say that in kind of like, okay, we watched that game play out, and for, what, 80% of that game, the Celtics were in pretty comfortable control. I mean, Steph Curry was doing Steph Curry things, and what are you going to do about it? You just, there's nothing you can do about it. But they led a majority of that game, and they were playing their game for the majority of that game. And for whatever reason, those last couple minutes, and I texted this to you as it was going on, they just refused to make easy buckets. And they made it 10 times more difficult on themselves, and it ended up biting them in the rear end because, well, you know, they went on Warriors went on, what, a 17-2 run or 17-3 run? It was that Marcus Smart three where you're thinking, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he actually hit that. And you're like, there's no way they can lose that game. Well, they didn't score a single point after that. So, yes, they can lose a game like that. So, look, I obviously you would much have rather them won that game. It was there for them to take. It was at home. But, you know, to be honest, John, I'm not that concerned. Like, I don't put too much stock in each game carrying over to the next. Whether it's win, loss, whether they played well, played great. I just, each game is so independent of one another that, like, even though they lost that game and it's now 2-2 and, you know, you're going to Golden State, I feel pretty darn well about what they're going to do tonight. And I feel like they're going to come out focused and play well enough to force this or go into game six with a 3-2 lead.
They haven't lost back-to-back games this entire postseason. In fact, they've only lost back-to-back games once, and that was since January. So we're going almost 6 months. And that happened in March when they actually sat their starters, didn't even play them when they were up in Toronto for whatever reason. I don't know if there was anything to do with the vaccine or whatever, but that was the only time they lost back-to-back games. So in this postseason, they'll win, look impressive, take their foot off the gas a little bit, lose, and then come back and make the adjustments to then win. So you would expect that to happen. This is just such an interesting postseason, Ian, because, you know, you look at the Celtics and you get kind of the feeling like, you know, George Costanza when he abstained from sex and, you know, was working at full capacity, and he's showing Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams how to hit home runs. And Derek Jeter goes, "We won the World Series." And George just kind of looks at him and says, "Yeah, in six games, like you should have made it easier." I get that feeling from like the Celtics fans and even some of the people that cover them that why is this so torturous going through this? And it is because you feel they're the better team than Golden State, although we can admit at this point through four games, Golden State does have the best player in Steph Curry. At least he's performed the best in this series. I mean, he was just electric Friday night. You just have to tip your cap and say that guy is the greatest shooter ever. We all agree on that. But, you know, they've made it difficult for them. But I also think that I don't think this is done on purpose. It's just that this is a team that's learning. None of these players have ever played in the finals before. Most of them are young, right? I mean, Jason Tatum's 24, Jalen Brown's 25. A lot of guys have to go through these growing pains. Not everybody's Magic Johnson as a rookie at 20 years old, you know, winning finals MVP. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen all that often. Heck, Michael Jordan needed his seventh year to win his first championship. LeBron needed his ninth year to win his first championship. So these guys are finding their way about this. And yeah, I feel confident because they've, quite frankly, played better on the road than they have at home throughout the postseason. They can go out tonight, win this game, and then have two opportunities to wrap it up, and they'll probably come back Thursday, and Lord knows what would happen then.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that's kind of the mentality that I took, you know, after watching that game and watching it kind of just, you know, slip through their fingers, you know, and at a certain point, you realize it was inevitable. You know how it goes in basketball. It's like there comes a time where that hope is no, you just realize, nope, that was it. That was the last opportunity they had to take control of that game. And I'm not pinpointing any specific play right now, but there was a point in that game where it's just like, yeah, that's it. You missed that shot. You missed that play. That's the time. It just doesn't add up. So, and look, I mean, this isn't a situation like in the past, like, you know, obviously this team, and we've talked about it before, where they kind of overachieved a little bit to get to the conference finals and maybe, again, took advantage of a weaker conference overall. That's not to take anything away from what they did getting to the conference championship. But had they made it to the finals any of those years or even in that conference, you know, you didn't look at them as the better team. You looked at them as, okay, they might be happy to be here. They're certainly the underdogs. And if they win this series, whether it's the conference final or the NBA final against what would have been Golden State, it would have been a massive upset. This is far more evenly matched. And again, we can make the argument that the Celtics have been the better overall team. And certainly, certainly I don't think that's debatable. I mean, I think they're deeper. I think they're, again, you had, 43 points from Steph Curry? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, they need, like, what are you going to not, you can't expect that again. No, you can probably expect something like that from Steph Curry again. The good thing for the Celtics is, despite all that, they were still well in control of this game. Like, Steph Curry was doing what he does, and it was inconsequential until the very end when the Celtics decided, well, we're just going to stop scoring. So no matter what Steph Curry did, the Celtics were still taking their shots and being like, all right, we're going to keep putting the, you know, scoring the basket. And, you know, all these tough shots, all these, you know, acrobatic shots, all that stuff, it's not going to matter at the end because, well, the Celtics have a better team. Well, unfortunately, they didn't do that. And they also allowed Wiggins to go 17 and 15, John. 15 rebounds. Like, that's something I'm comfortable saying that's probably not going to happen again. So if you're a Celtics fan and you want to sit there and put a positive spin on any of this, Wiggins is not going to get 15 rebounds again. And if he does, well, guess what? You do not deserve to win any game the rest of the series if you're going to allow that to happen. Because that's one thing that I thought their game obviously took a big step back from game three, and that was rebounding, both offensively and defensively, especially offensively.
Steph Curry had 10 rebounds at 6'2", and he's kind of a sneaky good rebounder. I mean, he's not obviously going to the rim and skying over people, but, you know, he knows what he's doing out there. He's an incredibly
very, very
smart
instinctual
player.
Yeah. You know, he knows.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and his footwork is impeccable. I mean, Steph Curry would have been a great soccer player, great tennis player. I know he's a really good golfer. I mean, his footwork is just next level. You see how he makes a pass and you probably take a breath defending him. And next thing you know, he's on the other side of the court, setting up for three, and it happened in like a second and a half because his footwork is so good. Yeah, that's a surprise that Wiggins had that many rebounds, because his career high in the postseason and throughout his entire career in the regular season had been 11. In fact, Draymond Green told the story on his podcast that, you know, he and Steph Curry were kind of laughing at him like after the game, like, dude, how did you never get more than 11 rebounds? I mean, you're like 6'7" and really athletic. But he picked the right moment to have his career high in rebounds. So yeah, I don't expect that this time around. Yeah, they got crushed on the boards, which in game three, they crushed Golden State on the boards. This is the kind of series it's been, right? It's just, you know, the old zigzag formula, which oftentimes happens. Because, again, as I've said throughout this postseason, there's no great team in the NBA, and these two teams, one of them is going to win a championship, but they're both flawed.
Oh, certainly. And we see that Golden State where it's like, you know, again, it's Curry or bust, really. I mean, I know Klay Thompson has, you know, had some, you know, better moments these last couple of games, especially, but it's Curry or bust for the Celtics team. I mean, and even then, and like I said just a minute ago, like you can allow them or allow him to do what he does, put up points, hit these ridiculous shots, get all these rebounds, and at the end of the day, you still had a comfortable lead late in that game. And it, again, you do very basic things, i.e., don't live and die by the three-point shot when you have a five-point lead late. Just get buckets, because eventually the Warriors are just going to run out of time, because they weren't getting, you know, it's not like they were running the floor and getting up and down. It's not like they had Kevin Durant, you know what I mean? They didn't have that second guy that could just be an absolute killer on the court. It was Steph Curry, and you had, you know, again, I hate to say it because I like Klay Thompson, but you had just complementary pieces. And that's kind of what he is right now. I mean, you got to remember, he's still coming back from two major injuries. So he's not that guy. He can still hit shots. I mean, you don't want to give him easy shots. I mean, you still want to contest and everything like that. But, you know, it's really just Steph Curry or bust. And, you know, they got to rely on, you know, maybe career games here and there from other players. I mean, Draymond Green is, if I was Steve Kerr, I don't even know if I'd put him on the court. I mean, he's been bad. I mean, not just like ineffective, but bad. Like it's almost like I want him on the court because obviously I'm rooting for the Celtics. But so to me, I look at this and I'm like, the Celtics could give Steph Curry whatever he wants, and I think they can still win the game if they just keep focused. They just, for whatever reason. What did Ime say the other day? Stop playing like an asshole or something like that, or something along those lines. Yeah.
Why are you guys playing like assholes?
Yeah.
That's a great comment because it's like what you're saying at home. Like, you can be better than this.
Yeah. No, and that's what it is. It's like, you know, and we sit there and look, I understand, you know, people are playing medical doctor with Jason Tatum. Look, my instant, you know, and the reason I say this is because I have experience with it. I think he separated his shoulder early on, and you know what happens when that happens is it first of all, it becomes a mental thing because it becomes a little bit easier for it to slide out. He seemed to, you know, sometimes be a little bit hesitant to go to the rim, which again, that would be something. I'm going to give you a little bit story now. I'm not going to pretend like I was some star basketball player, John, but I used to be tenacious. Okay, under the boards. I mean, there was nothing I could do under the board.
Oh, God, you're one of those guys. I hated playing against guys like that.
Yeah,
oh,
but you know what? I got rebounds, and I knew how to score. The problem was I ended up separating my shoulder playing hockey, and, I mean, since then, I never got it fixed. So my shoulder's dislocated, like, I mean, hundreds of times. I couldn't even begin to have an idea how many times it's happened. But ever since then, like, I don't have, like, for me, like, if I go up and try to block a shot with my right hand, there's a 50-50 shot that the pressure created is going to pop my shoulder out. So, in my mind, that's a deterrent for me to go do that. So, not only do I not play like that anymore, like, I just physically, it was a mental thing. And, of course, you know, obviously, I'm not Jason Tatum's a little bit better at basketball than I am, even at my
just
peak.
Just
a little bit.
Yeah,
But it still applies because he's still trying to heal through that. So his shoulder's not going to strengthen up until he's able to do any sort of off-season rehab or anything like that, or surgery or whatever. So, you know, he's playing with that, at times, timidness. Mm-hmm. And you can see that. Like, and he's talked about it, about, okay, you know, there's a certain mentality that, you know, when he's decisive, goes to the rim and actually looks to score and not looks for the foul, he's such a better player. And I don't think he's having as bad of a series as some people. I mean, some people have said he's been awful. I mean, scoring has been inconsistent, but he's been very good everywhere else along across, you know, defense, you know, facilitating that sort of thing. But you do want to see more offensively out of him. And part of that is, he goes through these spurts where he looks dominant, and then all of a sudden it becomes indecisive, and then it's, we're going to look for the foul. I think he said it yesterday. He wants to do less of going up on one leg, you know, and be a little bit more strong to the basket. So, you know, to me, I think he's going to be able to do that. I think based on just listening to him speak, it doesn't seem like, you know, the outside noise is necessarily getting to him as much as you would think, considering how young he is. So I look to see him respond very well, because less people forget, and I know I've seen these comments out there, like, when is he going to step up? He scored 46 points in an elimination game against the Bucks. Settle down, people, all right? The kid's 24 years old. He's had a good series, not great in terms of scoring. You know, inconsistent, I would say that. I mean, again, you want to see him step up, yes, but I think the criticism has gone a little bit overboard.
I want to see him more efficient than he's been, right? He was 9 for 23 from the floor on Friday. That's not good. You score 23 points on 23 shots. That's never good. The other thing, too, is he's shooting in this series 27% from two-point territory. That's abysmal, especially a 6'9 guy with his handle and his skill set. Shooting pretty well from three, though. He's shooting 45% from three. So he's the one guy you're comfortable with taking those threes. you can notice whatever the issue is with the shoulder, when he goes to the rim, he's not finishing strong. How many missed layups has he had in this series? And I think part of that is maybe he's trying to play to contact or play away from contact or whatever, and it's just not resulting in him making those shots that he normally makes. So that's going to be important. And if he can get one or two, you know, easy buckets early in the game on layups or, you know, whatever, then I think that is, will get his confidence up. Look, Larry Bird's first finals appearance in 1981, the Celtics won in six games over a team from Houston that was 40-42. I mean, they had a losing record and they made it to the finals. And in games 3 and 4 in Houston, Larry Bird scored 8 points in each game. He was 3 of 11 from the floor in each game. However, in those two games, he had 27 rebounds and 15 assists total. So he was able to step up. And that's, I think Tatum's learning that. Like, okay, maybe it's not my night to score. I'm going to keep going at it, but I'm going to go get double-digit rebounds, which he's done in this series in one game. And he had double-digit assists in the first game. So, you know, he's learning that you can do more than just score, but they do need him to be more efficient, because then that will just open up the entire offense.
Yeah, I wish Marcus Smart would learn that sometimes. Like,
oh boy, I wish I had confidence in my life the way Marcus Smart has confidence in taking a 3-point shot. Although he's not a good 3-point shooter.
Like, I love him to death. I'm not bashing on him at all. I'm just saying sometimes it's just like, Marcus, just like settle down a little bit. Like, understand that, like, you know your role. And just, you know, pick your spots. Because, like, again, he can, you know, he's good. Like, that's the thing. He could go out tonight and have a 30-point game, and this would be the Marcus Smart game. And we'd all sit there and be like, well, it's Marcus Smart, because he's certainly capable of doing that. But I think this, it's obviously, it's a team bad habit, you know, where they just get in love with that 3-point shot. And, like, they're a good good 3-point shooting team. Like, that's not at debate, you know, that's not, you know, we're not debating that. And I'm not saying that it's not important to utilize that, but I think sometimes they just get so enamored with it at the wrong times. Like I said, most importantly, this previous game where it's like, well, you know, they attempted one layup and then it was, what, 5 straight 3-point misses. And it's like, you just get points, you know, don't let, you know, this get out of control like it did, because after a while you miss and then it's like, okay, now you're doing the math in your head. Now you have to hit 3-pointers and there's no room for error. And unfortunately they, you know, ended up committing errors. But, I'm feeling very, you know, it's not as concerning for me that they lost that game. It was obviously disappointing in the moment. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you know, it's one game. You know, they've been here. We've seen them lose worse games this playoff run. I keep going back to that Bucks that loss where they blew the lead, that massive lead late. And I thought, there's no way that this team could ever rebound from that. I think I said that on the show, and then they proved me wrong. And since then, I've just been like, you know what? I'm not gonna keep going game, you know, melding games together. I'm not going to sit there and pretend like game four has anything to do with what we're going to see tonight, because we'll know what this team's going to look like early on. We'll get an idea. And that's the rhythm that we're going to go with moving forward. So, I do like the Celtics tonight. I mean, maybe it, again, it's obviously a little bit wishful thinking, but, it's also, there's a lot of evidence to it. You've already said it. They haven't lost back-to-back games. They've done it once since January, and they haven't done it this postseason. So I'm not expecting that to happen now. And if that trend continues, well, guess what? That means they win in 7 games. So, you know, if you're a Celtics fan and you want to hang your hat on something positive, that's something to hang your hat on. And not to mention, again, that this team does belong to be here. This team... Apparently, I can't speak today. This team, they belong here, okay? This isn't a team that's overachieved and it should be happy just to be here. No, this team belongs here, and I think they realize it, and I think they know the opportunity ahead of them. And look, I mean, we've never seen this team fold in any sense. Even in games that they were down big, they've managed to keep crawling and fighting back. So to me, I look at this and I say, yeah, you're going to Golden State, but to your point earlier, they played pretty darn good on the road, so I'm expecting that tonight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they played fine on the road. And again, I think with this series that we're looking at, I mean, again, with the long stretches of no games, you know, like you play Friday, then you play Monday, then you're going to play Thursday and all of that stuff, that, you know, it kind of stretches it out to the point, like, okay, now we're back in San Francisco. Let's see what's going on here. So that's gonna happen. I have confidence tonight. You know, again, if Curry continues to shoot like this, then, you know, it makes it that much more difficult because he's special.
Well, like I said, I mean, John, even with the points that he scored on Friday, that was the Celtics game to win. So that's what I'm saying. Sure. Like you could have, you know, the greatest Steph Curry game ever, which, you know, arguably this was his greatest postseason game, finals game at least. And you still have a chance to win a game. That to me is, that makes me feel pretty good moving forward, because in the past you'd say, okay, well, you got to hope that Steph Curry doesn't go off or you have no chance. Okay. Well, Steph Curry could go off and you're still going to be right in this if you're playing your game. And that's what I think is something you can really hang your hat on if you're a Celtics fan. So we'll find out tonight. We'll know tonight, you know, the next game after this, there'll be a chance for a team to close it out. And if you're a Celtics fan, obviously you hope it's their chance at home in game six. So speaking of closing out and championship series, I'm going to shift to hockey just a little bit to end the show, because the Tampa Bay Lightning, John, are back in the Stanley Cup final. And unlike the Buccaneers in the NFL, I cannot, you know, there's a reason that I can root and hope for the Buccaneers to win because of Tom Brady. Hockey-wise, I hate the Lightning. I hate them with a passion. Because you know what? They're a rival to the team I root for. In full transparency. I'm not going to hide behind it. I'm not going to pretend like I'm objective in that sense. But it's hard not to be impressed with what you see. I mean, this is the first time in my lifetime that a team has gone to three straight Stanley Cup finals. Again, in my lifetime, the last time this happened was the Oilers in the early 80s. So that was, again, a few years before I came into existence. So to me, it's hard not to be impressed with what you've seen. I keep thinking like, oh, this is Colorado's year. This is the time. But you know, how do you bet against the Lightning? I mean, how do you? It's like New England, you know, with Brady. How do you bet against them? I mean, they may not come into the game as the best. You know, they may be coming into the game on the road against the 15-1 Pittsburgh Steelers. But guess what? You're not going to bet against Tom Brady and the, you know, New England Patriots. Same thing. You're not betting against Andre Vasilevsky, Nikita Kucherov, and Steven Stamkos and the Lightning, because no matter what's on the other side, you're talking about the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion and a team that is remarkably resilient. I mean, it's so impressive, and again, it's part of its envy, John. I wish the Bruins were like this. I wish they were this successful. And if I could go back and take back every single joke I made about them getting swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets 3 years ago, I would, because you know, maybe that would not give them three straight championships or three straight championship appearances. But no, they're as impressive as you can get in the modern NHL. We've seen Pittsburgh go to back-to-back cups before. We've seen Chicago have a nice run. You know, LA won a pair of cups, but it wasn't like this. You know, they're on to 11 straight winning series so far. Andre Vasilevsky has been dominant in net. Anytime they have a chance to close out a series, and when they do, it's just pure domination on their end. And to me, it's just like, as much as I like Colorado, and I'm certainly going to be rooting for them to win, I don't know if I'd be betting on them to win, because again, how do you bet against the Lightning?
I saw the line in this series, and Colorado is a great team, right? They kind of just blitzed through the playoffs. They're minus 180, so you got to put 180 to make 100 on Colorado to win the series. You bet 100 to make 150 on Tampa, and I get Colorado has home ice advantage, and they look so impressive, but these are the two-time defending champion Tampa Bay Lightning, who are very comfortable playing on the road. It's not as if they're going to go on the road and get intimidated, and you know this way more than I do. You play the position. Doesn't Tampa Bay have a sizable edge in net?
Absolutely.
Over Colorado?
They have a sizable edge against anyone.
Right, he's that good. Right. So, I mean, that would lead me to believe that, yeah, that Tampa Bay is going to find a way to win this thing.
Yeah, look, I mean, I will say this, John. This is by far, I mean, if you want to nitpick at what Tampa has done, and there is opportunity to do so. I'm not saying this is, you know, the greatest run in NHL history. No, not at all. Because, you know, if you want to, and look, I will go to my grave believing this, that the pause in 2020, no team was helped more than the Tampa Bay Lightning, and no team was hurt more than the Boston Bruins. At the time, the Bruins were playing by far the best hockey in the league, and the pause hurt them. Tampa, on the other hand, I thought at the time, they were a really good team, no doubt, but, you know, going to Andrei Vasilevskiy, he was being absolutely overworked. He was on pace to play, I think, 70 or close to 70 games that season, which is kind of unheard of in the modern NHL. And I thought that was kind of their issue many seasons, was that, like, yeah, you have a great regular season and you work your goalie to death, but during the postseason, you know, you're playing 25, 28 more games, and it's every night the intensity level. I mean, that wears on a goaltender, especially one that had played the majority of the season. So, you know, that pause obviously gave them an ability to rest, go in and win in the bubble. Again, you can criticize bubble championships all you want. I mean, look, if the Bruins had won, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, it's an asterisk, whatever. You know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, but you go against Dallas and, you know, a fine team. You know, nice players. Next year, last year, Montreal, again, a nice team at the time. I mean, we, you know, they're a number one overall pick, John, this year. So you can see that, the talent discrepancy was very much in favor of Tampa. And I think they, you know, again, this does not downplay what they did to get to the final. I mean, again, you don't just arrive at the finals. You have to win three 7-game series to do so. However, you know, their opponent, kind of like the Celtics, you know, back in, what you said, 81 or whatever, it was...
Yeah, the 40 and 42 Rockets.
That's kind of like what you got with Montreal and whatever. Mm-hmm. This year, that's not the case. This year, you have arguably the... And look, Steven Stamkos said it, and I have, you know, and I know sometimes it's just a little bit of lip service. I do think that this is the case. I think they are the best team in the NHL, but, you know, again, at the end of the day, how do you bet against the two-time defending champion? But...
Yeah.
Yeah. I know a lot of people will be rooting for Colorado. Let's just put it that way. Maybe outside of Tampa and maybe Detroit. I don't know if Detroit's come around yet to be able to root for Colorado in any capacity. But
probably not.
No, probably not. Probably not. But I would it's safe to say that many other fan bases will be rooting, maybe not for Colorado, but rooting for Tampa to lose. And I think this is certainly going to be by far the toughest matchup. So if they can pull this off against this Colorado team, I think clearly it's going to be their most impressive run to the cup in terms of difficulty and just drama and everything like that. I mean, because don't forget, they were down 2-0 in game 3 to the Rangers, down 2-0 in the series, and they didn't lose. They won 4 straight. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come out against this Colorado team, and it's going to be interesting to see how this Colorado team responds because, you know, again, as talented as they are, this is the first final appearance for many of those players. Certainly they're stars. I mean, when you talk about Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, and of the like, you know, that this is their first appearance, and they're going to be without Nazem Kadri, who, again, this is a very deep Colorado Avalanche team, but when you're going up against Tampa Bay, you want to have all that depth, and not having Kadri out there is going to certainly hurt them. So, especially when it comes to the grittiness that Tampa can play with, and, you know, maybe you want a player that has a little bit of edge out there as well. So, that's going to get kicked off on Wednesday. So, if I was out in Vegas already, I'd be putting money down on Tampa. Because, like you said, I mean, it's a no-brainer to me. That's an easy bet to make because, again, how do you bet against Tampa? And yeah, I think
that's a value.
Yeah. Oh, easily. Value. I mean, easily.
Be like getting Tom Brady in a Super Bowl with, you know, 6.5 points or whatever, you know, whatever the comp would be, 4.5 points. And the thing is with that is Tampa has never had home ice advantage in any of these series this year, right? Because they played Toronto in the first round, won game 7 in overtime in Toronto, which we can laugh about the Maple Leafs. You know, they never find a way to win, but they're still a pretty talented team. Then they sweep the President's Trophy team, Florida. I mean, that wasn't even a series. Get down 2-0 against a really good Rangers team, like you said, and come back and win. And here they are facing, you know, maybe the most talented team in the league in Colorado. This would be a massive accomplishment. Like you said, last year with Montreal in the finals and the year before with Dallas. I mean, that was just a formality, right, when they took care of those two.
Yeah, I think they were very heavily favored. And again, I mean, I we look at where those two teams are now, and you can see, okay, you know, nothing, not to take away from their run at the time, but, you know, clearly we're not talking about a Colorado team that has been, you know, regularly President's Trophy contenders and, you know, been picked many times to go to the final. This is a team that's been knocking at the door for a very long time, and finally, very much like the Celtics, John. Actually, there's a lot of there's a lot of comparable. There's a lot of you know, comps there when it comes to young core, great future, but you know, just really trying to break through. And maybe this is the year for them. Either way, something's got to give. It's going to be. There's a couple streaks going on, obviously, outside of the Tampa's two. Back-to-back cups, but you have Pat Maroon. Oh, God, I going back to that Bruins and St. Louis series, I'm never going to be a fan of Pat Maroon. Like, you know, when I say I'm never going to be a fan, it's all based on my fandom. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just that guy that you just, like, you hate. Like, I chuckle every time someone gives him the nickname Fat Maroon. I think it's very immature, but I think it's just funny. I think that's just I giggle, but at the same time, the guys are potentially going to win four straight Stanley Cups.
Like, I know, and that's crazy.
That's absurd. You know, you're talking about almost like the Robert Horry of the NHL at this point.
Right.
Then on the flip side, you have Corey Perry, who is doing potentially maybe his best Barrien Hossa impression, where he's in his third straight Stanley Cup final, but he's lost the previous two. So something's got to give. So either Tampa's going to win, and Corey Perry's streak's going to end, and Pat Maroon's is going to continue, or they're going to lose, and Pat Maroon's streak ends, and Corey Perry's continues. Either way, there's a lot of fun little storylines going into all that.
Sure.
So we will certainly keep an eye on that as the series gets going on Wednesday, and of course, we will break down all of what happened tonight, maybe tomorrow. Maybe we'll do that. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We're going to say goodbye for now. Have a great Monday. Stay warm if it's cold. Stay cool if it's hot. If you have the day off, be safe. Have fun. Enjoy it. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.